Hey Henson, it's June 30th, 2020. Daniel Schreiner here. Just wanted to let you know that Jeff Chang and I recorded this podcast over a month ago before George Floyd's death. And a few years ago, Jeff gave a really excellent talk to our church after Ferguson. I don't remember exactly when, but our church was doing a series on race and the church. And Jeff, kind of last minute, shared his experience as an immigrant and an Asian American, giving a bit of history just to how Asian Americans first came to this country, but then his own experience. So this podcast, this episode was meant to be a briefer overview of Jeff's talk in conversation form. If you'd be interested in the fuller manuscript or talk that Jeff gave, just shoot me an email at the church office, but I hope you find this conversation helpful. Well, welcome back to the Disciple Henson podcast. This is Daniel Schreiner, and I'm joined here in the studio with Jeff Chang. Jeff, welcome.
Good to be here. Boy, your voice has gotten smoother.
Yeah, I've been working on that.
Yeah, you're going to be really good at this.
Brian Lewis has given me some tips and help. He listens to a lot of podcasts at work, so he tells me how to have that good, that smooth radio voice.
Excellent.
Well, we're here on the fourth floor of the main building. We miss the church dearly. As I was walking up here to the fourth floor, Jeff, I'm wondering about what you're going to miss as you think about this upcoming transition. I was reminded that we have a vase room here in the church. Did you know that?
I think so.
Yeah. Are you gonna miss that vase room?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna miss everything.
Okay.
Including the vase room.
Yeah. When you're looking for a new church, will kind of how high will that the church must have a vase room rank up there?
Well, I won't put it number one, but it'll be high.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that. One of the many blessings of being here at Henson. Well, this is a unique time in your life, Jeff, where you're really kind of on this verge of making this big transition. And you're probably looking forward, thinking about what is life going to be like in Kansas City and in this new chapter of your life. But you're also you're still here. Mm-hmm. And we're thankful to the Lord for that. You've blessed us through your preaching recently, and we still have one more sermon coming up from you, God willing. But you're also maybe looking back a little bit and reflecting on 10 years of ministry here and your 10 years here with your family. As I thought about this, I thought one of the legacies that you're going to leave behind is how you helped us in terms of thinking about the topic of ethnicity and unity in the church, and particularly how you as a Chinese American have blessed this majority white church. Your perspective and both personal but also your cultural history has really helped us, and I think given us more of a heavenly perspective or expression to our unity in Christ. So, as I think about this, I think it's no accident that, you know, since you've been here over 10 years, we've seen a number of Asian American brothers and sisters join this majority white church. And I'm so thankful for that. Any reflections on that? Do you think about kind of leaving behind that legacy? And yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah, several thoughts. I mean, I'm so grateful. On the one hand, I can hardly feel like I can take a lot of credit for that, you know, because for one, being Asian Americans, Chinese Americans, kind of what the way the Lord made me,
right,
and kind of the family that I grew up in, I didn't like work for it, you know, in one sense. I'm so grateful for Michael and his desire to bring me on, you know, as an associate pastor, for the elders here, of being open to that, for the congregation, for calling me to serve. And I'm so grateful for the way this church embraced me just even from the beginning. You know, I never felt, since my arrival, like an outsider. I felt recognized as a pastor here. I'm grateful that, you know, in God's kindness, brothers and sisters from different Asian backgrounds came along. And even if they were encouraged by seeing me here, you know, in leadership kind of initially, I think what really caused them to stick around was the power of God's word being preached here, but then also the love of the people, to welcome them into their homes, to again make them feel accepted and like they have a place to belong.
Yeah.
If I did play a role in the growth that we've seen from people from different backgrounds, I think that's only kind of the initial step, right? But I think now I'm just so encouraged when I look around. There are people from various backgrounds, and I trust that as visitors come to the church, they will see that and they will think, there perhaps could be a place for me here
too. Yeah, that's a powerful picture. And as you talked about the community and the love of the people, which caused, I think, a number of people to stick around, no matter what the background. Mm-hmm. I think, though, your work in particular, coming from your background of coming from kind of the more immigrant church background, has helped other brothers and sisters who maybe had that background, maybe growing up in the immigrant church, to come to a majority white church and overcome some of those inevitable challenges and differences from their own personal experience and culture growing up.
Praise God.
Yeah, no, really, really thankful for that. So that's kind of what I want to think in particular about your experience. Hear some of your reflections on what it's been like for you to come into a majority white church. And then conclude in terms of thinking how the church can pursue this kind of this heavenly vision that we see, this unity, this understanding, this love in the midst of all our differences, but particularly including our different backgrounds, cultures, and ethnicities. So let's start off by just, Jeff, where are you from? And do you ever answer that question differently based on maybe who asks you?
Yeah, where am I from? It's complicated, right? I normally say I'm from Houston, Texas. I understand, though, why for some people that's not kind of what they're asking about. So often when, well-meaning kind of Americans ask, hey, where are you from? And you say, I'm from Houston, Texas, they might say, oh, no, where are you really from?
Right? Oh, wow.
Trying to get at, kind of your ethnic background, what Asian country are you from? And obviously they're not trying to offend, but often what that question highlights is this idea that you're not from here, right? You're not, you're not from, you're not one of us. Where are you really from? For many Asian Americans, that can be kind of a painful thing to hear because, they might have been here for five generations and their grandparents served in World War II. But then, even now, even as Americanized as they are, they're still kind of seen as outsiders, right?
Yeah.
As foreigners. And that's kind of one of the dynamics that Asian Americans sometimes experience, which is this idea of like, you're perpetually a foreigner, no matter how Americanized you feel in your person and kind of you are culturally, unlike kind of German Americans or Irish Americans or African Americans or other groups that are eventually sort of assimilated into American culture, I think sometimes Asian Americans and other groups tend to have this kind of perpetual foreigner kind of view by others.
Yeah, that's such a helpful perspective to have someone who, like you said, maybe is Caucasian. Or even African American, they haven't had that experience, and maybe they have a hard time even initially relating to how that must feel. I'll ask though, when say an Asian American asks you where you're from, does that change maybe how you'll answer that question? And that's coming more from my own experience.
Yeah.
Because I'm a white dude with like German descent. If I see someone wearing a Minnesota Twins hat, I'll say I'm from Minnesota. If I see someone wearing or like who's from Kentucky, I'll say I'm from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Both are true, But how do you think about that when you're like talking to a fellow Asian American, perhaps?
Well, if I were to ask another Asian American where they're from, and he says he's from, the Bay Area, no, I accept that. Yeah, right, like, sure. That's great. So. I want to learn more about that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sort of pressing them as if they're like trying to hide something.
Sure.
You know, like, it makes sense. You're from the Bay Area.
Right, right.
You know, like, and I know friends from that area. Do you know these people? Like,
yeah.
Do we have any connections? I mean, we're trying to draw like lines of kind of commonality, right?
Right, right.
As opposed to saying like, oh, no, you actually, I mean something different, you know, like you're from farther away.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. I think, you know, there always is this interest though in someone's story. And certainly your story began, you know, well, tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us about where you were born. Why do you say you're from, like, when were your years in Houston?
Yeah, so I was born in Brazil. Mm-hmm. I think most people know this. My parents are originally from Taiwan. They immigrated to Brazil after the fall of Vietnam, kind of early 70s. You can imagine like how difficult that was, sort of parents immigrating. They were about my age at that time, mm-hmm. you know, early 30s, had a little kid, my older brother, you know, going to a brand new place, learning a new language, trying to start a business, learning the laws. They talk about how many mistakes they made in doing that, you know, mm-hmm. trying to raise a son in a different culture. They moved to São Paulo. São Paulo is not a pleasant place to live. I mean, they're living in like in the city, lots of crime, not great schools.
Do you remember that period of time?
Oh,
how old were you when you moved away from Brazil?
I was headed to third grade.
Oh, wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. yeah. And then they had me. So, you know, two kids now. So having to figure out the hospital systems, having to figure out schooling for us. It was challenging. But you know, as a kid, you don't know any different. As a kid, life seemed great. You know, I had a lot of fun growing up in Brazil. I enjoyed those memories. And then, so we were there for, you know, almost 2 decades. Almost a decade.
That would explain your affinity for Brazilian steakhouses.
About 15 years. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, in I think 85 or so, they moved to America. They had some relatives here. There was an opportunity for them to come to live closer to them, to give kind of their kids a better future. And that's when they moved to Texas. And once again, I mean, just starting from scratch, right?
Mm.
Learning the language, working with the relatives, eventually starting their own business. They started a laundromat, so classic kind of Asian American story. Mm. That's kind of the story I found myself in. I mean, what a unique and yet wonderful experience to grow up with this kind of resilient, hardworking, entrepreneurial
mm-hmm.
family.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so thankful for that experience.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of wanted to ask you about is ways that you uniquely feel like you saw God's goodness, His faithfulness in your kind of growing up in this hardworking immigrant family who took, you know, so many risks to move their family to Brazil and then to Texas, and so many of the challenges that they had to overcome, learning a new language, all these things like that, living in a different culture. Where did you see God at work, maybe in your family and in your community growing
up? Yeah, in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, I look back with so much thankfulness for my upbringing. You know, we weren't rich, but God was so faithful, and I never felt like I was poor.
Hmm.
You know, God always provided what we needed. I'm grateful for my background that I didn't just get everything that I wanted. You know, there are lots of things that my friends had that I wish I had, but I don't begrudge those things anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see God's protection of me and my family and provision kind of through all that we experienced. you know, being able to get through high school, get a college education. And my parents prioritized. I mean, they didn't spoil us materially, but boy, they sure sacrificed in order to, you know, save up for my violin lessons and math classes mm-hmm. and Chinese school, which obviously I hated all those things. But now I'm so grateful for them, for what those things taught me.
You gonna break out the violin for a little you know, special music before you leave?
Boy, they spent so much patience kind of making me practice and kind of making me take lessons, and now I don't even play anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, what it is I play guitar now, and a lot of that kind of carried over from my, violin lessons.
Yeah. Well, we're thankful that your parents had you do that, because you've been serving our church in that way. Yeah.
I'm grateful too. But, you know, God's goodness to my family, I think I see it even more in just kind of his spiritual provision. Because, you know, as hard as life was in Brazil, when they moved there, that's where they actually plugged into a local church. They plugged into an immigrant church, Chinese church, with other fellow Taiwanese immigrants in there. It was a solid church. They preached the gospel. They were intentional about discipling. I think that's possibly even when my parents were converted.
Really?
It was because of their involvement in that church. And so as I was growing up, I mean, I was growing up in a Christian home. My parents were serious about the faith. Mm. They were reading the Bible to us at home. And now my parents are some of the godliest, humble, servant-hearted people that I know. You know, mm-hmm. and they continue to serve the Lord even to this day, and all the roots of that go all the way back to, I think, that church in Brazil. Hmm. Certainly, since coming to America, they continue to be involved in the local church. We attended an immigrant church in Houston Chinese Church, and that's where I grew up. That's where I heard the gospel. You know, was converted, served, was discipled, and again, I'm just so grateful. You know, all this is God's mercy. You know, God's kind provision mm-hmm. for us through this immigrant experience.
Hmm. So talk a little bit more, Jeff, about your experience growing up, you know, particularly in Houston. Are you going to public, private school?
Yeah, public school.
Public school. And are there other Asian Americans and ethnic minorities in your school?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... initially, when we first arrived at the elementary school that I went to, there weren't as many, you know. So everybody was basically white. I remember the one friend I made was the other minority in the class, which was an African-American kid. Mm. And he asked me if I wanted to be his friend. Mm. And I didn't understand what he was saying, so I said no, because I didn't know the language. But then he said friend. I said, oh, okay, wait, I know that word. Yes, yeah. Yes, I'll be a friend.
Yeah.
So that was nice. But, you know, during those years, I very distinctly felt how different I was from the other kids.
Mm.
You know, which is... It wasn't like deeply hurtful or anything like that, but it was just very noticeable, right? Like different food, different habits, different values in your home. Like, oh, my parents never go on vacation. You know, my parents don't eat at Chili's.
you're really missing out there, brother.
That's right. We don't you know, go over to play dates at other kids' homes, you know, and like the other kids talk about that stuff, and that's kind of like the life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you just notice that things are different for you. As you get older, as I got older, kind of middle school, high school, there were more Asian American kids, and that was, you know, a new experience. Like, oh, actually, I'm meeting friends who come from kind of different, similar homes, you know, and similar experiences. They understand kind of what I talk about when we talk about the food that we eat and the things that we do as a family,
which must have been so refreshing.
Yeah. So yeah. You very quickly find a kinship there.
Yeah.
You know? They're
yeah.
they're taking violin lessons too, you know, mm-hmm. and they understand why you have to go to math class and do Chinese school. So pretty soon, kind of middle school, high school, my circle of friends just start to become increasingly kind of only other Asian Americans, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that, you know, like you said, it was very refreshing. But I think it was also, without being aware of it, I think it was also kind of isolating, you know, in the sense that, you know, I'm less and less kind of aware of what's going on outside of those circles.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm so grateful for those friends. Still stay in touch with a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about kind of that perpetual foreigner syndrome. But I think the reason that one thing that contributes to that, perhaps that kind of Asian Americans can participate in that unaware, is just the fact that we kind of look for community in our own affinity groups, right?
Sure.
And then so when we see these clumps of people in different groups, it feels like they're foreigner. It feels like they're other. But I think I want to create a space where I think it is allowed for us to enjoy time with our own affinity groups.
Oh yeah.
Because that's just kind of the way the Lord wired us. Mm-hmm. You know, we enjoy being with people who understand where we're coming from, mm-hmm. Who we can communicate well with. And I think sometimes people in majority culture can complain that, oh, look, the Asians are all hanging out together. Mm. You know, why don't they kind of break out of that? But perhaps what they don't realize is they just naturally enjoy affinities with one another,
yeah.
kind of being part of the majority culture, mm-hmm. That they take that for granted.
Yeah, you know? that's really helpful insight. Yeah, I trust that will be helpful to maybe people who haven't quite thought of it in those terms before.
Yeah. And so there's an opportunity here, I think, yeah. just understanding that dynamic, you know, that I was learning as I was growing up, where even as we enjoy our own affinity group, we also want to look for opportunities to learn about other groups, right? And even if you know, not always expecting for the minority group to enter into majority culture, though I think there's a place for that. But also that hopefully minority groups will be open to people from the majority culture kind of coming inside their circles, you know, mm-hmm. and learning more about that. And so mm-hmm. for somebody in the majority culture to actually kind of learn where somebody else is coming from and sitting at their table.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, that's a good insight. And I hope you've seen that from time to time here at Hinson.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
And I'll have a follow-up on that here in a minute, but you talk a little bit more in the remaining time that we have left. You know, you are in a predominantly white church now. And when you arrived at Hinson, it was really white, you know, we've seen more, kind of ethnic minorities come in and people with immigrant backgrounds come into the church since you've been here. And Stephanie, your wife is Caucasian. So talk about that transition. Like when did that occur? Not just at Hinson,
yeah.
but, tell us about, I mean, in some ways there it's, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but easier, refreshing. There's this natural affinity with other people who have similar backgrounds to you, and yet you started going to CHBC.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the transition. I mean, what happened? Kind of. I think at the very beginning of it was actually John Piper. Like through him encountering. This new vision of God's sovereignty and God's glory, his supremacy in all things, that he is at the center of the universe. That kind of worldview dominated by God's glory and power, kind of really rocked me. And it kind of reinvigorated my spiritual life. I wanted to begin learning more about this. And that's when I was introduced to kind of a whole new stream of Christian thinking and theology that I had never encountered before.
So it was this was in college, yeah?
Shortly after college.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, the thing about immigrant churches is that sometimes there's a tendency to be a little more isolated from kind of the rest of evangelicalism, you know, for various reasons. But, you know, through Piper, I was introduced to kind of the rest of church history. Hmm.
Now you're going to be a church history professor.
Yeah, look at that. So through that, I began to read more widely, began to learn about kind of the history of the church. I began to have a desire to preach, to pursue kind of vocational ministry. Hmm. The first church that gave me a shot at that was Houston Chinese Church, you know, to serve as an intern there. Hmm. And then so as I began to think about seminary, I considered kind of basically two options, either to stay in Texas where I could continue in this circle of kind of Asian American Chinese churches, you know, serve in those contexts, or to kind of head off somewhere where kind of things were less certain, you know. And the school that I was really impressed by was Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. And I don't know that I thought through it like with any kind of prophetic foresight, but I just thought this is where I need to be. You know, that the Southern was kind of, they had the right theological vision that I was after, the right kind of vision for the church and for ministry. So that's where I ended up going. And that was kind of, that was my, me leaving kind of that Asian American world, because there weren't many Asians in Louisville, Kentucky.
Nope.
Back in 2004 yeah. on campus. I think there are more these days, maybe.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so right there, I began to try to enter into my kind of very different culture, because up to that point, all my friends had been kind of in that Asian American community. But you know, there was this experience of like deep appreciation for their theology, for their view of the church, respect to these professors, but then this cultural gap also, right? Mm-hmm. Where I could tell like, oh, they communicate differently and mm-hmm. they joke around differently mm-hmm. and they do different things, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of entering in from the outside. Mm-hmm. I did an internship at Capitol Hill Baptist Church. I was welcomed in by the church. Mm-hmm. They loved me from the beginning.
So that was after seminary?
That was kind of after seminary.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Capitol Hill was a wonderful experience. There were other Asian Americans in the church, and we certainly shared all those affinities, enjoyed being together, but we weren't clumped off and separate either. You know, I'm really impressed with the way the congregation was pretty integrated as a whole, you know, in my experience. And I found kind of healthy and rich community there. And that's where I met Steph. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the discipleship of that church and thinking about these things that enabled me to be willing to kind of pursue a cross-cultural marriage.
Mm.
And then coming here to Henson, that's by God's grace been my experience too. Like I said earlier, I was loved and accepted from day one. I think something that we don't want to overlook is just the fact that here at Henson, there have been other Asian American members and even leaders in this church, kind of in the history of this church, you know, before we came. So I think of, you know, Kaz's dad, you know, Ron Kawamoto.
Oh, yeah.
I think of Shiz Kondo. These guys served in leadership at Henson and at Western and different places. And that's, you know, I think that's a sign of God's grace.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And let's turn to Henson. This is Disciple Henson after all. Anything that you would like to say to Henson on the subject matter? You've written some, and you gave a talk years ago on kind of the Asian American experience when we were doing that series on kind of race in the church. But what would, as you think back over 10 years and you think about your kind of what the Lord's taught you over the time of kind of, you know, growing up in the immigrant community, and then, you know, facing some of these challenges, but you know, having your kind of your theology ground some of the moves that you made. I guess what would you like to say to Henson regarding your experience and race in the church? That's a big question.
Yeah, it's a huge question.
Yeah.
well, first of all, I just want to express my appreciation and my encouragement to you guys. I mean, I think so many in the congregation have done a wonderful job in reaching out to those who are different and welcoming people from kind of different backgrounds into the church. Like I said, I feel like I can take very little credit, right, for any role that I played in any growth and diversity here in this church. But I think largely it's been first the work of the Holy Spirit, you know, through His Word, but then also just the kind of the initiative and serving kind of attitude that our people have had towards our visitors. Mm. you know, I think we live in such a culture where people are you know, sensitive towards these issues, and there's a fear that people might mess up. And so, you know, sometimes people in the majority culture are really nervous, you know, for fear of offending someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, like, here in the church, there shouldn't be any need of that. You know, in the church, you shouldn't need to be afraid that you're going to offend somebody. Certainly, you should be sensitive. Certainly, there should be a desire not to offend and a willingness to grow in understanding. But also recognizing that, you know, fear is the wrong kind of motivation for growing in these in kind of cultural sensitivity, right? Rather, we understand that these relationships that we live in the gospel are rooted in grace, in the grace that God has shown to us. And so therefore, in a, let's say, particularly speaking to folks maybe coming from the majority culture who are more integrated into the church, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to those who are different from you. And don't be afraid to that, you know, don't, that you might mess up, that you might say something that's insensitive. You probably will. but you know, if you do, that's okay. You know, try to understand what happened. Try to understand things from their perspective. You know, confess, admit that you're wrong. Don't excuse it, right? But then continue to engage. You know, continue to recognize the basis of grace that undergirds all our relationships. Work hard at communicating and understanding, and move towards them rather than waiting for them to come to you. You know, for those who are kind of more in a minority culture, coming to Henson, this is kind of a different place for them. You know, I'm so grateful that you brothers and sisters are here in this church. And I would just say, you know, part of your role here is, I mean, you have such a wonderful role to play in displaying the power of the gospel, right? To unite people from different backgrounds. And certainly you could do that in an immigrant church. I'm not saying, you know, I think God unites people with all kinds of differences, not just kind of ethnic background. But, you know, if the Lord has you here, you do have a wonderful role to play, you know? And so even in your difference, there's an opportunity, and it's not something to feel bad about or to begrudge, but kind of embrace that, you know, and exercise grace as you experience difficulties, take initiative, know that you're not a second-class citizen, you know, in any way, but the Spirit of Christ dwells in you, just as it dwells in all of God's people. So live as kind of full members participating in the community here.
Those are such solid words, Jeff, and something really I think we all need to take to heart. So thank you. Thanks for taking the time to reflect on these things together. And when you think of Henson, pray for us that we would make progress in this area, that we would be moving towards one another, not in fear, but in love, and extending grace to one another when we will inevitably say stupid things or get names wrong,
right.
You know? We want to see this place, this church, this family be a safe place. You know, for no matter your background, or no matter if you, you know, sin against a brother or sister, that grace, trusting that grace will be extended in those circumstances. Yeah. So such helpful stuff. Henson, God willing, you were helped by this conversation. Feel free to reach out to Jeff for any questions. Jeff has written more on the subject, and as I referred to before, he's spoken on this, and so he or I could point you in the direction if you want to be thinking about this more. I trust that you will be talking about this together as a church family. We're going to have at least one more podcast, God willing, with you, Jeff, as you think more generally just about 10 years of faithful ministry here and just some reflections on that. So God willing, that'll be the next podcast that you will hear. And thanks again, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you so much, Sam.
All right.